Welcome to the Mojo Podcast with me, Richard Stokes. It's wonderful to have you. Whether you're a regular listener or this is your first time, you're very welcome. This is a place for real people to share real stories of change and transformation. And I hope they inspire you in a small or a profound way to take a step or make a change that you've been thinking about. Today's guest certainly made big shifts to make fundamental change in his life's direction. Now, if you're listening in real time, we're just past the day when for most of us, New Year's resolutions have either ended or kind of failed. And that's January the 17th, according to the fitness app Strava. Now, I got a belief that resolutions are fundamentally doomed and very much last decade. So I'd encourage you all to think about and write down intentions instead. I like to create a list of 9 for the year. And if you manage to catch my Mojo Toolkit episode, you'll hear why. Full disclosure, with a rather busy start to 2020, I've only actually just today finished writing mine. So that is proof, if you ever needed it, that it's never too late. So give it a go. One of my intentions for 2020 is actually about discovering even more of this beautiful island I live on. And another of my intentions is about making sure I'm doing the things that I love that keep my mojo flowing, one of those being walking in nature. So that brings me, rather neatly, to this week's guest. And this week is all about walking and the immense benefit we get as humans from the simplest and most accessible of all exercises. We probably understand the physical benefits well enough, fitness, heart health, etc. But this is more about the psychological and the mental benefits. Now, as we discussed today, walking is thinking. Have you noticed when people pick up a call on their mobile, they often get up from their desk and actually start to walk around, especially if that's maybe a difficult or a deeper level call when maybe decisions need to be made. That person is doing that because it's helping them think. The act of walking is helping them think. Personally, I've made some huge life discoveries and decisions when walking, as the act of walking activates both sides of the brain, which is great for clarity and thought. Indeed, I sometimes coach people while we go out for a walk for that exact reason. So walking is good, and I wanted to bring some expertise on walking to the Mojo Podcast. Now, given I live in Ibiza, I turned to Toby Clark, the founder of Walking Ibiza and a man who knows more than most about what walking can do for us. Toby shares his mojo story of a profound moment of realization that his corporate career wasn't fulfilling his true purpose and that he had a calling to return to the island of his birth and formative years, Ibiza. Toby goes on to share great stories and anecdotes about the value of walking and how he now runs a business based around his deep passion for nature and exploration. Also a cautionary tale that too much of one good thing can sometimes do you harm. Yes, balance is certainly a key word for this episode. I met Toby at his house in the Ibiza Campo or countryside last week. We sat in his garden, enjoyed the silence and the winter sun beating down on us. I really hope you enjoy this episode. As ever, it would be wonderful if you could share this podcast with your friends. Maybe leave a 5-star rating, and just the best thing you can possibly do is write a short review on Apple Podcasts. All of this allows more people to discover the Mojo Podcast. Okay, over to Camp Paradise. Yes, the name of Toby's house, for a fabulous chat with Toby Clark. So we're sitting in the grounds of Cass Paradise, the home of Toby Clark, who is the founder and owner of Walking Ibiza. And I've been looking to talk to Toby for a while now because my wife and I have enjoyed many of his guided walks on the island. We've actually had some of our biggest chats and made some of our biggest decisions whilst on those walks, and also found it hugely sociable. So it's a pleasure to meet the man behind it and to hear his mojo story. So hello, Toby.
Hi, yeah, how are you doing? Lovely to be sat here in the garden.
Isn't this sunshine absolutely fantastic? I should say, yeah, we're sat amongst pine trees, the sun. It is January. The sun is pouring through, and I think we're getting a bit of a tan here while we're sat, which is very nice. So on that basis, in this lovely environment, Toby, how is your mojo today?
Absolutely brilliant. I'd have, if it was anything less than that, something would be wrong with me, I think. We've got the beautiful sunshine here, one of the reasons why we live on Ibiza. And yeah, I jumped out of bed this morning, and then you realise how cold it is in the mornings here. But get yourself in the sun and the day's good. Feels beautiful.
So getting into the sun is a massive benefit for you when it's from a mojo lifting point of view.
Yeah, really, I feel like if I don't get enough sun, then I start to feel low and can't be asked to get out of bed, and everything like that. So I normally get my chair, and we've got my garden surrounded by lots of pine trees, and I've got a laptop, and I move around where the sun's pointing, coming through the pine trees, just to stay in the sun in the winter. In the summer, you do the opposite. You want to go around in the shade, but in the winter, when the nights are starting to draw in here, which is still light until about 6 o'clock here, so different compared to other countries, we're still very blessed, but it's definitely about the sunshine for me.
And talking about mojo for you, getting a lot of it from the sun and that vitamin D, but what does mojo mean to you?
Good question. Mojo sort of means having that energy and the mojo to get out of bed in the mornings. And if you wake, when you open your eyes in the morning, if you haven't got a reason to get out of bed and a mojo to get out of bed, then you've lost your mojo, you know, and you've got to keep that going and have a reason to get out of bed, do whatever you're going to do in the day, whether it's some work or you're retired and have a hobby or whatever it might be. It's having a purpose in the world to actually do something. So for me, that's what mojo is. I think if you don't have a purpose in the world, that's where a lot of people lose their mojo.
Fabulous, that idea of a real purpose that's making you jump out of bed every day and kind of getting on with things. And we'll get into instances of maybe when your mojo hasn't been as high as it is on this lovely day in Ibiza, but in terms of your purpose, what is that for you?
My purpose in life is a good one. I'm going to be 50 this year, so you sort of start to reflect on life a bit and why am I on this planet and why are humans here, and start reading a few books as to the purpose and meaning of life and things, or I have anyway. And just reflecting on, you know, why am I here? What's my purpose for being here? And I've run companies a bit like you. I've had been in the corporate business in England before. And I remember I was running this super successful company. It was turning over 5 million a year and everyone was going, wow, it must be amazing. And I said, yeah, but I still don't know what I want to do in my life. And I was going, but surely this is it. The house, the car and everything, but I actually realised that still wasn't what I wanted to do. I was successful at it, but that's not what I wanted to do. And it's only when I came to Ibiza and gave everything up in England that I actually started the walking by another default way. And it was within that period that I realised that's what I wanted to do. And my purpose was to take people walking.
Wow. And what's, I mean, it seems hard to think about low mojo again as we're sitting here in this fabulous island full of energy, but was there a moment or a time in your life, maybe when you were back in England, that you realized and you had, by the sounds of it, this fantastically successful career, all the accoutrements that went with that, the house, the car, etc., but what made you recognize that maybe mojo wasn't where it needed to be?
It was what I remember the exact point that it happened. I used to have a fabulous car, two or three cars at the time, and a house, and everything going wonderfully well for me, big expense account, and life was super, super great. And I used to drive around a lot. I was visiting clients and specking up things for work and that. And so a lot of my life was stuck in traffic jams. And, you know, in England, the M25 was, everyone knows, this big ring road around London that we all get stuck in, more, they call it the car park. And I remember the moment was, I'd finished my work down in Kent, but I would be living up north near Chester, Nantwich area. So I was having to drive all the way back home. No traffic, you can do it in 3-4 hours. And the car slowed down into another traffic jam. And I just looked at the traffic jam and thought, this is all fucking bollocks. I just thought, this is all bollocks, excuse my language. And the thought that followed that was that if this is the meaning of life, then I may as well take my car, drive round to Dover, and drive off the cliffs of Dover and end the life. I thought, this is bollocks. This is not any good for life. And that was my pinnacle moment that I thought, right, I've got to do something about it to change it. And I actually did eventually get home 7 or 8 hours later, walked into our very nice house and said, darling, we're leaving England.
and what sort of response did you get from, it's your wife, your partner?
My wife, yeah. She actually said, thank God. And that was the response that, and she had already sort of gone through a bit of a journey and was almost waiting for me to become on the same wavelength as her. So we then put a big plan into place, and it actually took us 2 years to then fully leave England. Mm-hmm. But that was the moment when the pinnacle change in my mindset, where, you know, if this is my life for the next, I could continue working for 30, 40 years and then draw my pension at 65 or 70 or whatever. But if that was the medium period of the next 25 years, I thought, this is bollocks. I'm not doing this for the next 25 years.
So do you think, I mean, that's a, clearly in your mind, that's a very clear moment in time when that happened. You're on the M25 and that clarity of, well, I might as well just turn around and drive off the White Cliffs. Do you think things have been building up to that? And this was just, this was the kind of, you literally drove into this traffic jam and that was the moment.
Yeah, there was definitely stuff building up to it. I really missed, it's not just the sun, but the attitude of some people in England, you know, is much more of a negative, or I was surrounding myself by more negative people. You can surround yourself by negative people here as well. But there's a lot of negative things, and I'd also started doing a lot of work on myself. We'd just done this incredible course with Tony Robbins, if you know him.
Yes, not personally, but no. Of his work.
Yeah. So we'd done a huge course with him, so I was learning about myself more, learning what drives me, what I wanted to do in the future, you know, learning about your beliefs and realizing that most of my beliefs were all my parents, and really, rebuilding myself as who I am and not who my parents made me to built me up to be. And so, yeah, it was slowly building, and I was just looking for that excuse or that reason to, that trigger point. And that was a trigger point where I actually went, right, okay, this is the moment.
This is the time. And fascinating that your wife clearly, maybe she'd got there herself and she was waiting for you to get there versus telling you that you needed to get there maybe.
Yeah, Belinda, my wife's an amazing woman, and she never will push anyone. They've got to make the decision by themselves. So yeah, she was pretty cool in hanging back. But she'd already sort of was working a lot less on in the corporate world and was getting into Reiki and crystals and mandalas and all this stuff that I was going, she's gone crazy. And now I do all that myself. But yes. But at the time, it was just like she'd make me lie down and put crystals on me. She's saying she's practicing things, and I'd fall asleep within like 2 seconds. And I'd wake up and go, yeah, but that's just, I'm really tired, I've had a hard day. And she'd go, no, that was the crystals that sent you to sleep and stuff like this and giving me Reiki. And I just wasn't into it back then. Now I realise that it's all really important stuff. So, yeah, so luckily I had the right woman to hold my hand through it all.
Yeah, well, I can absolutely relate to that. I think my wife got to her realisation ahead of me, but also knew I had to make my decision to leave my then also corporate job, and then we also arrived in Ibiza, but a little bit behind you now. Now Ibiza is hugely meaningful to you because you were actually born here, weren't you?
Yeah, I'm a product of the hippie generation. My parents came out to Ibiza in 1969. They just received a letter from some friends that were here, and in those days there's no email or anything, and the letter said, "You have to come. We found paradise." And I so wish my mum had kept that letter, but they don't have it, unfortunately. So they decided to rent out their house in England. And they already had my little brother, who's a year and a half older than me, brought a Bedford camper van, a wrecked old Bedford camper van. And they thought they were just going to go and drive around Europe for 6 months. So they went driving around Europe, came over to Ibiza to see their friends, and ended up staying here for 10 years. So I was born here and then had the most amazing first 10 years of my life here. A paradise to be a kid in, even now, but back then really, really was.
So, I mean, I've heard all the, you know, the stories of the hippies coming in the 60s and early 70s and settling. But I just love that sense of, as you say, pre-email, a letter arrived. Paradise has been discovered. You must join us. And of course, we'll just leave everything behind, take our two kids. Yeah. No, sorry, one kid, and you arrived here. Mum, yeah. But, you know, family in tow and let's just go. I think that is what amazing spirit. And has that kind of infected you somehow? Have you got some of that adventurousness?
Yeah, for sure, because when I decided to give it all up in England and sell the house and give up the ideal corporate job that my dad wanted me to have so he could tell his friends, my dad actually disowned me. So unbelievably, I was doing exactly what he had done, but he couldn't believe that I was doing it. And I kept trying to get this to him, and we didn't speak for 6 months. So that was, I had the adventurous spirit that he had to repeat what he was doing in the next generation. So it was very weird for me to have this conflict with my father, but I was just having the adventurous spirit that he had bred into me, you know, from growing up here as a kid. And even now, we love going out for adventures. I obviously do a lot of the walking, but every year we go on an adventure around the world somewhere, take out 4 or 5 weeks and go and explore somewhere and discover new places. So definitely got that inside me. My dad's passed away now, but luckily after 6 months we reconnected, and then everything was great again. And then sort of towards the end of his life, he really was appreciating what I was doing, because from him, he could tell all his friends that my son's got this great corporate job in England, suddenly to, oh, my son's a hippie walking. And for him, he couldn't put that in, you know, it wasn't something he could connect to and realise how happy I was doing it. But then later in life, he did realise the enjoyment I got from it, and that I was actually way, way, way happier than I was before.
Got it. So he could connect. The narrative took a little while to get there, but then he worked out, actually, yeah, there's probably a reason why he's going in this direction. It's because exactly what we've shown. And your mum lives here, right, on the island? Because I've actually been on a walk with her, which was fabulous.
Brilliant. Yeah, my mum, I'm really blessed to have my mum living here as well. She came back now 5 years ago, and she was living in England. And she kept, when once we moved out here, of course, she had left Ibiza in 1980. And she kept coming back to see us when we moved back here now 11 years ago. And she'd stay for 1 week, then next time she'd come and stay for 2 weeks, then next time she'd come and stay for 3 weeks. And then she came and stayed for 2 months. And we're like going, okay, like, Mum, I love you, but why don't you just move here and get your own place? And that's what happened. So she's now living here as well. And so she was away for 33 years and then came back. And she loves it here, so happy. She does the short and sweet walks every Wednesday and makes her homemade cake and tea at the end, which is, she's got a great community. Has a great social life. She loves a garden. You know, she's flourishing here. It's amazing to see.
That's beautiful to hear, actually. And the walk we did, I remember distinctly, there was a child on the walk who had got heat rash, and your mum went foraging into the undergrowth and came back with some herbs, and sort of mashed them up and put them on this this little boy's arm, and quite quickly you could see the heat rash had gone away, and the mother of the child was just like gobsmacked, as we all were. this is genuine herbal medicine. It was incredible to see.
Yeah, my mum's great like that, and she's learned so much since she's been here, and there are so many wild herbs for curing things in the world, but I know more about Ibiza because I've studied them on Ibiza more. But there's stuff for everything here. There's officially about 25 herbs, wild herbs on the island, and they're all great at doing different sort of ailments, from big cuts that are bleeding and need antiseptic putting into them and a bandage that you make out of the leaves and stuff, to curing heat rash. So that's brilliant. My mum did that.
in the field, actually, yeah. In the field. Yeah. Post the Mojo realization, you moved here with your wife and set things up. But what's... Did you have a plan? Did you know what you were going to do when you arrived on this beautiful island?
No, not at all. We actually, when we left England, we decided to go travelling, and the idea was to go travelling for 2 years. So we literally took a small backpack and went travelling around the world, which was a most incredible experience. From going from big corporate salary, we decided to just survive on $10 each a day. So it was in Latin America, so it was possible, but very much dormitory. Beds and really simple living, and buses and everything else. So it was a most amazing journey we had, and we actually cut it short by a year. So we only did it for a year in the end, because we had an amazing experience in Peru with a shaman, and we were on teaching medicine, shamanic teaching medicine. We both had this same vision and then the same download of a message that we have to go to Ibiza now. So we actually cut the whole journey short, and we landed on Ibiza, and we didn't know what we were going to do. We had no idea. We just landed here and thought, let's just see what comes.
So, I mean, actually, my last guest on the podcast talked about an ayahuasca experience. Was it ayahuasca?
It was actually San Pedro. San Pedro, which is the, I think, mother is the ayahuasca and San Pedro's the father. Or the other way around, I can't remember. But San Pedro's a lot more gentle.
Right, okay. Because hers did sound pretty extreme, actually. But that gave you, both of you, this vision, this sense of, this is where we need to go. And obviously you'd had a connection to the island, you were born here, but it's you have to return.
Yeah, it was always that we were going to come to Ibiza, we were going to come back home. We'd actually looked, my wife said, right, we like Ibiza, but we could go and buy a palace on mainland Spain. So we went and we went on holiday to mainland Andalusia, and we looked at palaces and, you know, huge ruins and everything. And yes, we could have brought one, but then we came back to Ibiza before we went travelling and said, yeah, but it's not Ibiza. So we decided on Ibiza, and we were always going to go travelling and come back to Ibiza, but we didn't really have a plan of what we were going to do here. And I then started, actually, during the same period of the shaman, Belinda attuned me to Reiki. Mm. So when we actually first came here, we started giving Reiki treatments, and that was what we were doing. And that was what we first sort of settled in doing, but a very simple life. We lived in a little apartment and we'd go on beautiful walks every day, and we'd do a bit, had a few online companies at the time, and we were doing that in the morning, and every day we'd go out exploring different parts of the island that I remembered, and exploring new parts of the island. And that was in this glorious sunshine in the winter. I remember that very beautiful first winter we spent here, just exploring and driving and walking and going, wow, yeah, Ibiza is really beautiful.
And is that where the genesis of the idea for walking Ibiza came from, that those explorations you did, those walks with your wife?
It was, and that was another moment that happened, that I just got Cosmo, who was here a minute ago.
Cosmo's the dog, by the way. Yeah. Everybody.
I just got Cosmo the dog. He's now 10 and a half, so it sort of gives you an idea of the time. And so I was starting to walk and explore more and just think, yeah, this is beautiful, and I'd find little paths and think this is beautiful. But actually what happened is that I remember the point, I was having a cold beer in Ibiza town with a friend at the time, and I had this message or this feeling that came again, very much like when I had the moment on the M25 that said, but it was a better feeling this time, that said, why don't you walk around the entire island? And the feeling came through to me, and I sort of got the, you know, when you get goosebumps, and I thought, wow, I'm going to go and walk around the island. So literally a week later, I went home and told Belinda, I'm going to go off and walk around the island. She went, really? Okay, fine, if that's what you feel like doing. Because we didn't have much else to do. So literally a week later, I went and brought a backpack. And I'd never walked like that in my life before. It's not as though I'd been walking in England or anything. I got a backpack. And the night before I was going to go and do the walk, I was working out how I was going to feed myself, the food I'm going to eat and everything, and how much money I was going to take. And I remember packing my bag in the rucksack in the bedroom, and I was looking through my wallet, and something made me open up a drawer and throw all my money and all my cards in the drawer. And as I closed the drawer, there's a little tap, you know, when a coin rolls and then settles down, and I opened up the drawer and there's €1 at the front. And I realized I'm supposed to take €1 and survive around the island. Because for me, just walking it with money and everything didn't feel like it was right. I wanted more of a challenge. So I decided to walk around the island with €1. And that's how it all started.
Wow, I love that story. I mean, most of us are constantly checking our pockets for our phones, our wallets, our keys before we go out. You're consciously leaving all of that behind you to make it more of a challenge, as you say, more of a deeper experience.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience. And the first day I was like, where's my money? You think, where's your money or where's your wallet, especially when you're out? And I was thinking, I actually haven't got anything. That was it. And my very sensible wife, Belinda, said, just take enough food and water for 24 hours, because I was taking Cosmo with me. He was a 9-month-old puppy at the time. So I took enough food and water for 24 hours, and then that was literally it. But slowly, what I realised is that by going through the process of not having the money, the first 2 or 3 days was pretty much, I've got no money. What are you going to do? You've got no money. And someone gave me an iPhone 3 at the time, and they showed me Google Earth. And I thought, this is genius. Google Earth, you can see where you're walking, you know, even with a little dot so you can follow where you are. And I thought, this is genius. It's going to be a walk in the park. And of course, people in iPhones now, battery life isn't good. But back then, it lasts an hour and a half. And that was it, gone. So I put the iPhone in my bag and it was like no map at all. And I purposely took no map. I just thought, I'm going to walk clockwise, so I need to keep the water on my left. And that was my intention. And on the first day, I got horrendously lost, like really badly lost, in the hills of Captus Falco around Salinas.
Oh, yes.
And I was walking around literally for hours in circles, and it was getting dark, and I was thinking, what am I going to do? And then I did get out of it eventually. But the beauty was that I just had what I had on my back. You know, that was all I had. So it was an amazing, sort of turned into a vision quest, if you like. You know, when they send out shamans to become a shaman. I'm not a shaman at all, but it felt like it was a sort of... integration for me, to integrate back into Ibiza after being born here, leaving it for a long time. And it was like my quest to connect back with the island. So the most amazing journey. It was beautiful.
And just a really practical question, how did you get food and water and food for Cosmo as you went round the island?
It was interesting. I started going to bars and restaurants, the ones that were open along the coast, and I'd tell them my story. I'm saying, I'm walking around the island, and I said I was doing it to promote the beauty of the island. And people started giving me food and water. It was incredible. And throughout the whole journey, there's only one place that didn't give me anything. And I'm not going to name the name, but it was the place that's probably one of the richest beach bars on the island is open all year, and is in Callaghan Dal, still open to this day. It was the only place that didn't give me anything, unbelievably. And now it's actually changed owners, so fair enough. But that was the only place. Every other place, they would sit me down and say, have anything off the menu, or go and get something and give me a baguette or something. It was really an amazing experience.
That is astonishing to hear, because I didn't realise, because I knew a little bit of that story, but I didn't know quite where you were getting the food and water from, whether it was from people's houses, but it was the bars, and these are commercial enterprises. They're hearing your story and saying, yeah, you know, I'm going to support this. Yeah. The kindness of strangers is an amazing thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the big word that came for me from the walk was trust. Mm. So if you trust, amazing things happen. Trust and faith is quite a similar word, but have faith in your day, have trust in what you're doing, and amazing things happen. And it really was an incredible journey. And there were a few houses that I knocked on doors as well, with some hilarious consequences of sort of naked people coming out to give me food and inviting me in and giving me their whole fridge full of food because they were leaving. But it entailed like 24 cans of Coca-Cola, which I don't drink, but they insisted on me taking it because I'd need the energy. I'm thinking, Coca-Cola's not going to be anything. So I then gave it away again, yeah. Which was quite interesting to do. And that happened a lot. And Cosmo definitely helped being with me because he was a 9-month-old cute puppy. He's still cute, but even cuter then. And what actually started to happen is people would be feeding Cosmo before me. So I'd be going, what about me? And they were feeding Cosmo first and then go, oh, do you want something as well? So it was quite an interesting story for one man and his dog on €1.
That's a phenomenal story. And so bringing that kind of up to date, now you, obviously, we're going to talk a bit more about Walking Ibiza now. You're kind of replicating a bit of that experience, aren't you, with some of your guests, customers, whatever you call them when they come over. Tell me about the Round the Island quest, adventure that you run.
Yeah, so what happened is I completed the Round the Island by myself, and it took me 11 days, and I survived, and I had a bit of 50 minutes of fame and got in some newspapers and that, but then I still didn't know what I wanted to do. I had no idea. And then someone came to me and said, you should start doing walks because you know the island really well. And I said, well, I know the coastline. I don't know it all. And so what happened is it was just the beginning of Facebook. Facebook's very much part of our lives now, but it just got going sort of 8-10 years ago. And someone said, you can create an event and put an event on Facebook. So I put an event on Facebook and said, I'm going to be at this point. Anyone want to come? And first time, no one came. So Cosmo and I went for a walk. Yeah, because I thought, well, I need to take Cosmo for a walk anyway, so I went. Yeah. And then slowly it built and built and built, and it's built now. It's been 10, it's actually this year is the 10th anniversary, so rather 2020 being 10 years ago since I did that original walk with the Euro. And yeah, it's built into a business that I can't quite believe how many people we take walking and what happens. And the first request I actually had to do the big walk was everyone was coming to me saying, oh my God, you walk around the island. I'd love to do that. And I go, well, off you go. Go and get yourself a backpack, keep the sea on your left and go. But then they'd all be going, no, we want you to take us. I'm going, well, I could, I suppose, but I don't know. And then a group of about 8 got together and said, Toby, we want you to take us around the island just like you did. And I said, okay, let's do it. So I thought of a figure out of thin air of how much to charge them. They all signed up, and that was the sort of the inauguration walk where we did it. We didn't do it with the Euro. We provided food and water, but everyone carried everything on their backs, and it was one of the most amazing experiences ever. It was my first, I sort of led groups for work in the corporate world, but never led a group out in the wild, dealing with hunger and thirst and tiredness and blisters and overweight people. We had on that walk underweight people, all sorts of things, and I absolutely loved it. I just realized this was my element. I love keeping the group together. And it was the most amazing walk. And in fact, that's the first walk that Joe Yule came on. Of course, does podcasts, and Joe Buckle, Billy O'Rafferty, all people that are still on the island as well. And we were in touch. That same group is still in touch with each other. So it was a most amazing experience.
And what went on that 12-day, which you do twice a year, I think that's right. What is it that's drawing people to do that? Because that's it's a lot of how many kilometres is that?
The total is 260 kilometres. Oh, okay. So it's a fair old drag. And I did it in 11 days, and I've added a day in with the idea that we have two sort of half days off, which sometimes works out. But what's driving people to do it? It's the reason why I love, it's the same people that come on my day walks, is that it's people that have a love for Ibiza. And they're not, very few of them are real walkers, if you like. They haven't walked Kilimanjaro and done all the route to Santiago or anything. They have a love for Ibiza and want to use it as a tool to get to know Ibiza more. And that's what I love about it. Most of my walks, you very rarely see people turn up on a walk with all the kit on and the walking sticks and all the right gear on. It's people that just are out for a walk and they love Ibiza and they want to get to know it more. And it's very much the same people that come on around the island. It's people that aren't maybe used to walking. Maybe some of them haven't walked more than 30K in a day, you know, and this walk is going to challenge them. So it's a walk that's hard, but it's not crazy hard. You know, it, really anyone who has the push to do it can do it. And it's the most amazing experience.
And what have you seen? I'm imagining when people do it, obviously they've got a love for Ibiza, they want to get to know the island better, but are people coming here to work some things out for themselves, conquer some demons, challenge themselves? What are people getting out of it?
People get way more out of it than they think. A lot of people sign up to the walk, turn up at the first meeting we have before we do the walk, and I'm telling them this is way more than a walk, and they're going, yeah, of course it is. And I also do sharing within the groups. So some people don't like sharing things, and the first share is like, yeah, my name's Toby, next. And I try and bring a little bit of spirituality to it, whatever your interpretation of spirituality is. So we start to get to know each other, and when you're on a walk for 12 days, you really get to know everyone. You know, you're talking through them all the day, and if you want quiet time, you can have it, but you're generally getting to know everyone really well. And people open up. You know, walking's an amazing thing, and you suddenly have been told this whole life story of this guy that you assumed was someone at the beginning, and you realise there's something very different. And slowly their masks come off and they reveal their true selves. And it's lovely to see that every single walk is the same, where you always assume or you make an assumption of someone when you first meet them, and we're all guilty of doing it. But very slowly over the days, these people change. And we've had huge changes in people that have come on the walks. And I've been blamed for a few marriages splitting up, people leaving their jobs, changing the route of their life to do what they really want to do. Loads of the people have moved to Ibiza since doing the walk. So it's all sorts of different things. And it's great to see the people go on this journey. And that's what I love about it. It's amazing.
So it's having... Usually, if you might go on holiday for 2 weeks, but you don't spend that amount of time really deep in thought and the sort of thought that comes from walking, we'll get into that in a second. So having that 12 days whilst talking to people, whilst socialising, sharing stories, I guess you're going to get all sorts of outcomes, aren't you?
Yeah, some of them are very hilarious through the times, and there's always a good group energy. Well, not always actually, but the group sort of goes in its path through the 12 days. And yeah, we all love each other at the beginning, then there's a few like, oh, I don't like them so much with the group, and then always at the end the group comes together again. It's a lovely journey, and yeah, you have so much time to think. And these days, years ago people used to take a two-week holiday, you know, that was what you did in the summer, and now hardly anyone takes a two-week holiday. It's more about short weekends here and there so you can go away more often. So to take 12 days out just for yourself, and that's what people are doing here, is really something that people don't do anymore. You know, they go and do a yoga lesson or they go on a day walk, but to actually take 12 days out and say, I'm going to dedicate the 12 days just to me and I'm going to do this for myself, and that's what people don't do anymore. You know, so that's why it's such a lovely journey to do.
And I mentioned at the top the value that my wife and I have had from walking with you, and actually previously in our life in London, making big decisions on walks that we did. But it just more generally in terms of walking, what are you seeing that people are getting from? You mentioned an amazing story to me about Einstein as well, and his use of walking for thinking. Can you talk a bit about that one?
Yeah, walking for years has been incredible. There's two lovely stories I like. So Einstein, famous mathematician and scientist and everything, he got so good, he lived in London, did he? I can't remember where he lived, but he had this gorgeous garden and he had a 1 kilometre circuit around his garden, and he got so good at it that if he had an issue he wanted to solve, he would go and pile up stones for it so he would know how many circuits he's walked. He'd go around with a walking stick, and every time he did a circuit he would knock one of the stones off, so he knew he'd done one circuit, and he did that to solve his problems. So if he had an equation or something he couldn't solve, he would then say, right, I need to go for a walk. Out he'd go for a walk, and he would always solve his problem. And if he had a big problem, he might have to do 5 circuits. If he had a little problem, he'd just do 1. And he knew how many circuits he'd have to do to solve the problem, which I think is amazing. And the other lovely story I love is the North American Indians. They have the same word for walking and thinking.
No way. No idea.
Yeah, so, and I actually don't know the word, but it's definitely a fact that they have the same word for walking and thinking, which I think is so great, because it is. You go out to walk and you go out to think, you know, it's amazing.
That's brilliant. I'll try and find the word and put it in the show notes. Yeah. Or maybe someone can find it for us. But that's a fantastic story. So generically, walking just so incredibly good for you, as you said, in terms of just being able to get out there and think. But what about the kind of the physical aspects of walking? You were telling me yourself about an injury you suffered from walking.
Yeah, I think God was looking down at me, ready to give me another lesson or something, because I do a lot of walking. And you sort of think, well, walking's great. You can't overwalk. But actually what happened is I did actually do too much walking without linking it into another exercise. So life is, if you do too much of anything, it's not good for you. And I just thought, yeah, walk, and I'll be fine. But actually I wasn't doing any stretching, or very little stretching. So walking is great for you, but it really tightens up your hamstrings, you know, because you're walking all the time. And then if you don't stretch them out at the end of the walk, then for me, unfortunately, it led to me having a herniated disc.
Ouch.
So, yeah, a incredible amount of pain, and not realising what it was at the time either. So I was literally starting to get this sciatic pain down my leg, thinking, oh, I just need a massage. So we're living on a healing island of Ibiza, so everyone's a massage therapist or has some great therapy. I was getting massages, acupuncture, craniosacral treatments and all sorts of things, but the pain just wasn't going away, until literally I couldn't sleep because of the pain. I was on the sofa trying to do bits of work, but I couldn't carry on walking anymore, and I literally couldn't walk even to get up to the toilet. It would take me like a half hour just to walk 10 steps to get to the toilet. So it sort of accumulated. One day I stood up and the pain was so much I collapsed, and I was actually by myself in the house, unbelievably. So eventually I managed to get someone, and I said, oh, I just need to go to the hospital, but an ambulance had to come and get me into hospital. And they went, yeah, it's a herniated disc. I was like, well, I've heard of one, but actually, what is it? And so then I found out what it was, and I was in hospital for 2 weeks, and they were trying to get rid of it, or trying to give it enough to go back in. And then the only option was to have an operation. It was a pretty major operation as well, to, you know, open up. And they said it was going to be keyhole surgery, but it's a big scar about 3 inches long in my back, and I realise it's Ibiza keyhole surgery. You know, those big old keys from the old villas and the old fingers.
We've got a door which takes one of those big old keys. Yeah. So I know exactly what you mean. And actually, this is something that that Toby and I share in common. We discovered just before recording that I've also had surgery for a herniated disc, although it was in London, so I think my scar might be a little bit smaller than yours. But yeah, I remember the impact as an active person of not being able to just to do the things you wanted to do was maddening. And I guess for you, your business, your life is based around walking. What did that do for you and your mojo?
Yeah, it totally dropped out. It was very difficult time to think, what is happening to me? What, you know, you go through all the why me, I'm healthy, I'm walking. And it took me, you know, a long time afterwards to realise that, you know, I was doing too much of one thing and not focusing. I was focusing more on just walking and not on myself, actually, unbelievably, as strange as it sounds, and that I need to take more care of myself to keep my body fit. So yeah, I went into quite a low then, especially post the operation. Pre the operation was horrendous pain, and all you're trying to focus on is how you can move without being in pain, as you connect with me on that one. And then post the operation, I luckily woke up from the operation and the pain was gone. So an amazing feeling to wake up and go, oh, I can move and there's no pain. But the actual full recovery probably took me about 18 months. You know, it's a long recovery, and I was still very stupid, unbelievably, and I thought that I could just recover in 3 months. And people were saying, no, you need at least 6 months to a year to fully recover. So what did I do? Started walking too much again. And I nearly did the same thing again. So then I felt it coming on again, and then we went on holiday, and I spent 1 week in the bedroom doing exercises, and that stopped it coming on again. And since then, I've been much more sensible about it. But it's ridiculous how you get this crazy thing, and the brain puts out all the pain, and you think, I'm going to do everything to stop it happening again, but something happens with us humans that we don't listen.
and walking so intrinsic to what you do, and you get so much enjoyment from it, so not doing it must have been incredibly hard, until, I'd say, thankfully, you got those signals from your body that you really need to stop, otherwise this is going to come back again.
Yeah, it was just a crazy time. From being so much into walking to ending up in a wheelchair, And it was just like, kept thinking, this is so ironic. You know, why is it happening to me? And yeah, it was a real low time. And I remember many times sitting in the hospital and just thinking, this is all bollocks and shit and why me? But slowly, as the pain goes and you can start moving again, then I had a reason to get going again because I knew I still wanted to walk, but I had to come back even stronger and fitter. And also, at the time, then I wanted to go and stop it happening to other people, you know, because suddenly then at the time, it always happens, doesn't it? Suddenly everyone I walked into had had the same problem. Right. And it's a real it's a human problem. Apparently we weren't really made to stand up. And that's from when we're on all fours to then we stood up, that was when the problem happened, if you believe in evolution. Lots of things that...
That's a whole nother podcast, yeah. Right there.
So I decided to really bring in the stretching to the walks and try and educate people on how important it is, even if you think you're super fit, because all you do is go out biking, you've really got to do the stretching and something else, or all you do is go and play hockey or whatever it might be. It's all about balance in life, and so much so.
I so agree with that. It is, everything in life is about getting the right balance between whatever you're doing, one activity, another activity, what you're eating, what you're drinking, how you are. Balance is everything. And that sort of, when you're talking about your stretching, which sounds like it's a daily activity, because it has to balance out the walking, which is a daily activity, I ask all my guests about other habits they have, because, you know, for me, mojo is not a constant state. It's something we're always working on, and I'm certainly getting that from lots of my guests. What else do you do that helps your mojo on a daily basis?
I think I would love to have the same routine. Well, would I love to? No, I probably wouldn't. But I don't tend to have the same routine that I do every single day because my life's very different. Some days I'm out walking at 6 in the morning and other days I'm not walking till 10 or 11. But on the days when I have enough time to do it, and that's what I'm really learning to do as well because it's super important to make that time, I like to wake up in the morning and do a meditation, either a guided meditation just to get some good vibes, get some good feeling into the day, some positivity into the day. And then I have my own sort of routine where I do 15, 20 minutes of yoga. And I can go to lessons, but I really find I've got this good routine and I just enjoy getting up, having that moment to do that. And then just followed by a little 5-minute quiet time, looking at a candle or something like that to really get you set up for the day. And I find that if you start the day, or if I start the day like that, it really sets you up well for the whole day. And the days that I don't do it, I still have a good day, but it doesn't have that grounding right at the beginning of the day. Mm. So that's what I like to have, that sort of routine to do it.
And I imagine you're staying away from your phone and social media and all those things until after you've done those activities.
Yeah, what I try and do is I go into the lounge, but I don't even look at my phone. But my phone's never in the bedroom with me, always in the lounge. I don't even look at it, just get on and do what I'm doing. And the phone's on silent anyway from the evening before. And just after that, I have a nice glass of water, sit down with a nice cup of tea, a green tea I love, and then I'll start the process of looking at things and deciding what I'm going to do. If I'm at home for the day, if I've got a walk on, then I'll get ready for the walk and off I go on the walk. But it is nice to have routines. Us humans like routines, even though my life, I think if it was the same every day, then I wouldn't like it. But some sort of routine, 3 or 4 times a week to do that every morning, really keeps me on a nice level playing field and keeps my mojo high.
Fabulous. This has been a wonderful chat. Thank you so much for your time. Just before we kind of close up, any future plans for Walking Ibiza that you'd like to share with some of the listeners?
Yeah, this year is the 10th anniversary, which I can't believe the company's been going for 10 years. It's quite incredible. So we're going to do some cool things this year. We've got an Around the Island Menorca coming up 27th of March, because we're now doing Walking Around the Island on Ibiza, Formentera and Menorca. And it's one of my list is to go around, walk around Mallorca, which is the big island. It's about 800 kilometres and there's a big load of mountains in the north of it. So it's going to take about a month to do it, I think, but that's on my list to do this year individually, and then I'll offer it to other people. And then we've got Around the Island Ibiza, which is 12 days around the island in April and in October, and the October one is the 10th anniversary walk. So I'll be leading that one and be doing definitely some special things and some special surprises on that walk. So it's going to be an amazing thing. And later in the year, sort of into September, we're going to do a little Walking Ibiza festival. So we're going to have a couple of days a weekend where we're going to have loads of walks, kayaking, which I also do regularly now as well. And we're going to do lots of guided things and have a bit of nice live music, good food. It's right by the beach, so we're going to have a lovely little walking Ibiza festival as well. So really looking forward to that. I never thought I'd be putting a festival on in Ibiza, so rather cool.
Well, that sounds awesome, and I'm glad I'll be around in September to join that. And Mallorca is an island I love as well, but I cycle around it, and I know what those mountains are like. They are fearsome. They are properly big. So good luck with that. That sounds like an amazing endeavour.
Yeah, Mallorca's got huge mountains, and you say they practice them for the Tour de France, don't they? So they're proper mountains, but the rest of it's actually quite flat. So once you've done the north, which is 1 week to do that, you can do that 1 week in one go over the North Mountains, the Tres Montañas, and then the rest of it is actually quite flat, but there's absolutely no coastal path either, so it'd be very much like Ibiza, where I just had to find my own way round. But it's quite exciting doing stuff like that, so I'm looking forward to it. And the other contrast is Menorca is super flat. Okay. So Menorca, the highest point is only 300 metres, Ibiza's 500, yeah. And I think Mallorca's 1,500, something like that. So it's Menorca is a beautiful island to walk, really loads of flat rolling hills. Almost reminds me of Wales or Cornwall a bit, because they have cows over there as well. So it's really different. You think you sort of label all the Balearic Islands with the same badge, but actually they're super, super different islands. So it's nice to go off the island sometimes and take people to another island to explore. So it's great.
Fabulous. And Menorca is on our list because that's one we haven't been to yet, and I do hear it's really, really different, so that's great to hear. And all I will put links to the website and the Facebook page, which is probably the best ways, I guess, of finding out about what you're doing, on the show notes. So when people are coming, and I would urge anybody who's coming for a holiday to this beautiful island, there are lots of things to do here, and you know, the clubbing side, everyone knows about that, and the beaches, but Go for a walk with Toby and his amazing guides with Walking Ibiza, and you'll see a whole different side of this beautiful island.
Yeah, I call Ibiza the island of yin and yang. You know, we have the crazy party that you can go and do and drop your drugs and drink yourself into oblivion and spend an absolute fortune. And then we put 4 walks on a week, which are just €10 by donation. We also do private walks as well. So you can just come and have a lovely 3, 4, 5 hour experience on just €10 a walk and really see another side of Ibiza that the press doesn't cover at all, or very, very little. They cover a tiny bit of it, but there's a whole other side to Ibiza that people don't realise, and I hope too many people don't find it.
Well, it depends how many people listen to this podcast and others, which you've done. We're putting the word out there bit by bit. But Toby, thank you so much for being so generous with your time, telling your mojo story today. It's been wonderful to hear. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Great. And I look forward to seeing you on a walk.
Well, I loved that chat with Toby, sitting in his garden and listening to someone who very clearly does what he loves. And thank you to him for being so open about his own ups and downs of mojo throughout his life. So some key takeouts for me. You know, Toby asked himself a really profound question. Whose life am I living? Is it his own, or was it that of his parents? That's a tough one, but he really got into that and answered it. And it's really interesting to hear him talk about how open he was to the visions and messages that came to him and helped him with some of those big decisions in life. I think we could all do well to look out for some of those signals in life a little bit more too. And perhaps my favourite quote, if you trust, amazing things happen. I love this sentiment about letting go of control sometimes. I've got a mojo challenge for you this week. Obviously getting out and doing more walking is a fabulous thing for everybody, but very specifically, let's take a note out of Einstein's book. Find yourself a problem, a decision, or something you're wrestling with, and take it for a walk. Think it through and see where it gets you. It'd be lovely to hear about some of the challenges and the decisions you were wrestling with and what came up when you went for that walk. So let me know. Okay, I've got some fabulous future guests coming up for you. We're looking forward to those conversations. If you have a topic you'd like covered, or you know someone with an inspiring story, please do let me know, because I'm always on the lookout for new, brave and inspiring mojo stories. You know, I'm immensely grateful for every listen this podcast gets. Thanks for taking the time, and I really hope it's valuable for you. If it is, please do leave that 5-star rating. And if you've been thinking about it, haven't quite done it yet, leave that short review. And actually, if you have done it already, you can go back and do another one if you like. All of that, again, makes the Mojo podcast even more discoverable for more people. Until next week, I hope your mojo continues to flow.